Harding.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
This is David Salvin.
Hey everybody, this is John L.T.J. Dirksen.
Hey guys, this is Jason Anthony McDonald.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is Al Wapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mullen.
Full Contact Fighter Radio is the name of the show, and Brendan, I'm trying to read this script, but it's in some weird typing, so I'm having trouble reading it, but Full Contact Fighter Radio is the name of the show, and I am your host, Kelsey Mullen, and joining me now is Brendan Lear.
What do you mean, weird typing?
It's a weird font, this latest there's submission.
There are machines that actually take letters of the alphabet and mechanically reproduce them.
Well, to the listener who sent in the submission, man, that's why I'm having the difficulties.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it typeset in like old Gaelic or something?
I think it's in Cyrillic.
Cyrillic? Oh, that's tough.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah. Actually, no. We haven't received one submission, and for anyone who's tuning in for the first time right now, they probably don't know what we're talking about. So we should probably move on. Sometimes there's grave danger in prolonging an inside joke for too long.
Let's move on, Kelsey.
Yes.
Let's move on. I think that's the wise thing to do. The t-shirt will remain with me.
Right. Exactly. It's going to be a good show, I think. We've got Sam Stout coming on the show. He's looking to rebound off his recent loss in the UFC against Kenny Florian. He's defending his TKO lightweight championship against J. Estrada in a couple weeks here, or I guess next week, September 29th in Montreal. So we'll have Sam on and see how his training's been coming along. And then we'll have Christoph Szczesinski, one of Canada's better heavyweight fighters who recently fought in the IFL and is going to be also fighting on the TKO card. And that guy's crazy busy, too. I mean, he's a promoter as well. He promotes the Ultimate Cage Wars in Canada, in Winnipeg, sorry. So we're going to have Christoph on the show as well, man. So it should be a packed show, as always.
It'll be interesting to see how that Montreal show goes over, because they're actually, it's going down in the Bell Centre, which is where the Montreal Canadiens play their hockey games. So it's like the equivalent in Quebec of having the UFC in a cathedral somewhere, maybe St. Peter's in Rome or something like that.
Yeah, it would have been better if it was in the old school Montreal Forum.
Yeah, Montreal Forum, yeah.
But I know what you're saying. And yeah, it will be interesting to see what kind of crowd they draw. You know, off the top of my head, I can't think of any MMA cards that have been held in Canada that had, you know, that were in venues that had capacities over 10,000, 11,000 people. So it will be very interesting. And Montreal and Quebec, the province of Quebec, are definitely an MMA hotbed. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm very interested to see. I mean, when they were having the rumors about UFC 63 being held in Montreal, that was a few months ago, and George St. Pierre versus Matt Hughes, I think then you probably would have had a real good chance at a sellout or something like that, or getting 14,000-15,000 fans in the Bell Centre. But TKO has been around a long time, and then they've had some pretty strong support in Quebec as well. So, you know, with a guy like Mark Hominick fighting in the main event against Ivan Menjivar, and they got Sam Stout and Ichil Arenas and Christoph Szczesinski and Chris Ordecki. It's a great card, and yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I think the Menjivar fight would be worth the price of admission. And that's what it'll be controversial. Is his K-1 fight before that or after that?
It's after, yeah.
He's but only a week after, right?
Just a little bit more than that. I believe it's October 9th. He's supposed to fight Cal Lomo.
Okay, right. So he's got to make weight, recover enough to fight, and then a week later make weight again with a trip to Japan and recovering from jet lag.
Yeah, and get out of a fight a guy like Mark Hominick, who's a pretty potent striker, and you got to come out of that with no cuts or no serious damage or no knockouts for that matter, and take on one of the other better lightweights in the world in Cal Uno. So it'll be interesting to see. But Ivan's an extremely talented fighter, and I think North American fans, for the people who haven't seen Ivan fight or remember his fight against Matt Serra in his only UFC performance, he's definitely more ideal fighting at 155, 145. The guy's got a crazy amount of talent. So, but you're right. That main event alone is going to be worth the admission. And then we've got UFC 63 this weekend. We're going to have to do our picks, man. We'll do that in the outro here today. And it'll be interesting to see if I can retake the lead. I'm behind, I believe, 4-3 right now.
Highly unlikely, but stranger things have happened.
Yeah. Well, let's get on with it. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Some things are worth fighting for. 14 American mixed martial artists will battle in the jungles of Costa Rica. 7 will earn the right to fight the Russian Red Devil Team in front of the world, live on pay-per-view. Only they know what this fight means to them, and they'll get their chance to prove it on Bodog Fight. The fight begins September 19th. Check local listings or visit BodogFight.com for more details.
By now, you've probably seen dozens of your favorite MMA fighters wearing full contact fighter clothing. But hey, listen, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With the FCF shop, we have all that you require for your fight wear needs. From NHB corduroy hats, tricot jackets to camo board shorts, or the NHB Extreme Fight shorts, our famous hoodies, to the classic full contact fighter t-shirts, all your MMA clothing can be found at www.fcfighter.com. Pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or you can also reach FCF to place an order by calling 516-676-0033. Also now open is a Full Contact Fighter sticker and banner shop, plus a full assortment of all your favorite official IFL team clothing is now available at fcfighter.com, or call us. Again, that number is 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter. The undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world. Joining us now on Full Contact Fighter Radio is Mr. Sam Stout. Sam, how are you doing today?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. So Sam's going to be taking on Jay Estrada, defending his TKO Lightweight Championship of the World on September 29th at the upcoming TKO. And Sam, my first question for you is, how's the training coming along for your upcoming fight against Jay?
Training's going great. You know, I'm working hard. I'm doing a lot of strength and conditioning training. Sean's been bringing in some good wrestlers for me to work with, and you know, training's coming along very well.
Now, I was reading a press release with some comments from Jay Estrada, and you also countered those comments in the TKO press release. But I'll let you counter these sort of so that people can hear your point of view on some of the comments in case they missed the press release from TKO. But it says, quote, Jay Estrada saying, "I'm going to squash him just like I did the first time we met," which is 3 years ago, your first MMA fight. He beat you by rear naked choke. But, yeah, he makes some comments about, oh, he's going to take you out and then wants to fight Chris Horodecki next. And your reply to that was pretty, you seemed like it kind of rubbed you the wrong way.
Oh, definitely. You know, Team Tompkins is like a big family, you know, and Chris is like my brother. So when, you know, anyone who's had a brother before and had somebody talk smack about him, he just kind of gets under your skin a little bit. That one definitely irked me for sure.
Yeah.
So, and in regards to those comments about him squashing me like the first time we fought, he is coming up against a whole different fighter this time. You know, at that point I was basically just a kickboxer. I had done no wrestling training, no jiu-jitsu training whatsoever, and you know I'm a completely different fighter now. So if he thinks that's the way it's going to be, he's got another thing coming.
Sam, my first question for you is sort of follows along Kelsey's. How do you mentally prepare yourself for fights, and do you find yourself, what is your attitude towards your opponent generally in fights, and now that this particular opponent, there seems to be some kind of animosity between you two, is that going to take you away from your normal preparation, or is that going to feed into your normal preparation?
You know, it kind of helps motivate me in training, but, you know, it helps when you can kind of picture that person and make yourself a little angry at them, and, you know, you don't really... You know, you never want to beat up somebody who's become like a friend to you, but me and Jay Estrada definitely aren't friends, so that's not going to be an issue. When I'm training, you know, it definitely helps motivate me knowing that he's been, talking a lot of shit, and yeah, definitely. But when it comes to the fight, I'm going to go in there and try, you know, keep my usual game plan, stay relaxed, not make any stupid mistakes, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, he alludes to later in that same comments, he talks about your recent loss to Kenny Florian, and he uses that as an example, you know, obviously trying to get under your skin, saying that it's proof that you haven't advanced as a fighter, that you still have some big loopholes in your game. What would you say to people like Jay or anyone else who may, you know, make comparisons to what happened against Kenny Florian?
You know, that was, I don't know, I've been trying to just... like figure out what happened to me in that one. That was more of a mental mistake than anything. Like I came in and I didn't fight like my usual self in that fight, and you know, I apologize to all my fans for, you know, putting my best foot forward, but you know, it's another learning experience. Whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger, right? And I definitely have learned from it. I've been working on that escape from the rear naked choke, so don't worry about me getting caught in that one again. And, you know, it's just a bump in the road for me. I have, you can't say that I haven't improved as a fighter. Anyone who's watched me over the years has seen the improvements I've made in my game, and it's ridiculous to even say that.
I like you busting out the Nietzsche quotes. You should keep it up.
You like that?
You gotta read as part of your training. You have to read Beyond Good and Evil before your fights.
Yeah, Beyond Good and Evil and The Art of War and all that.
Sam, what are your reflections now? You fought in the UFC twice. Your debut fight was a really great fight against Spencer Fisher, and you really looked like you had some momentum coming out of there. A lot of people in their first fight succumbed to that kind of pressure. And then your second fight must have been a great disappointment to you. Do you think that Kenny Florian really showed himself as a premier fighter in that fight, or do you think that you let that one slide, and then that Spencer Fisher is probably actually a tougher fight for you?
I think it's a combination of both those things. I definitely can't take anything away from Kenny. He's a great fighter, and I think I underestimated him a little bit because he was a lot stronger than I expected, a lot quicker to take advantage of my mistakes, and I'm not going to take anything away from him. He's a great fighter, and I give him a lot of credit. That's not to say I don't want to, work my way up and avenge that loss someday. But, at the same time, I do feel like I was overconfident going in a little bit, and, I kind of beat myself, as well. Kenny finished the job, but I think I didn't go in with the right mental game plan. And, that's such a huge part of this game, right? It's like they say, it's 90% mental.
Now, you mentioned your game plan. You want to stick with your usual game plan coming up against Jay Estrada, and I'm guessing that means, the usual for most, all the Team Topicans guys is try to keep it standing, avoid the takedown, and let your stand-up skills win the fight for you. Where do you put Jay's skill set at? Do you think, he's got some wins by submissions, he's got some wins by TKO. Do you think he's more of a risk to you on the ground, or what do you think of his stand-up skills?
I definitely think he's more of a threat on the ground. I didn't see too much stand up. He doesn't really try and stand up with guys, and I don't think he'll try with me. I would expect him to, throw maybe a couple punches just to try and work his way in on a shot or work his way up to the clinch. And he likes to go for those throws and stuff. So that's what I expect to see from him. In all the fights of his I've watched, that's what I've seen him try and do. And everyone I've talked to who's seen his other fights that I don't have, tape of, that's pretty much his game. He's a ground-and-pound fighter. And, I'm working on things to neutralize and counter those, that style.
Sam, for those folks who are listening who aren't familiar with TKO, describe this card coming up, and you could argue that it's probably the biggest card in Canadian MMA history. Describe a little bit about your fellows on the card and where it's all taking place.
It's taking place at the Bell Centre, where the Montreal Canadiens play, which is the largest venue that TKO's ever done. It's going to be, it's going to be a great show in terms of, especially when you look at the talent that's on this. The main event, Mark Hominick and Ivan Menjivar, that's going to be, probably one of the biggest fights in Canadian mixed martial arts history. That is just something that people have been dying to see. I'm dying to see it. It's going to be a very exciting fight, a very good fight. You got myself and Jay Estrada. You have another one I'm looking forward to is James Martinez and Donald Wimay. There's just a great lineup of fights on this card, and I'm pumped about not only fighting on it, but just pumped about it as a fan, as an MMA fan.
Now, is this event going to be the debut for the TKO cage, the octagon, or are you going to be fighting in the octagon for this one?
Yep. That's something else I'm looking forward to. As a striker, I always kind of felt that, before I had really got in the cage, I kind of thought it was a little dangerous for me, but, after fighting in the UFC and getting in the cage once or twice, it's a pretty cool feeling, it just kind of represents the sport a little more, being been in that cage, you know, with just everyone growing up watching the UFC, and it just, I kind of think it adds a little extra excitement to it, and, you know, just it symbolizes, you know, the game, the mixed martial arts game.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned
what is your preference, Sam? If you could choose.
Well, you know, there's pros and cons to both. Like I said, it's you know, it's a cool experience just to be in a cage, and you know, if you know how to use a cage, you can use it to your advantage. But on the other hand, as a striker, especially going up against a good wrestler, it can be a little dangerous at times too, right? If you get pinned up against that cage and you don't know how to stand back up and use it to your advantage. But you know, and the ring's always good for a striker, especially in TKO where they have, you know, if you get tied up in the ropes, they just stand you back up. So that's always been kind of good for me. But it's never, you know, I'm pretty good at with ring control and stuff anyway, so I can usually keep the fight pretty much in the center of the ring where I like it to be.
Now, you mentioned the Mark Hominick, Ivan Menjivar fight, and you're right. I mean, most Canadian MMA fans are really highly anticipating this, and I'd argue, you know, many international fans as well who know about, you know, both those guys. And as well, you've got Chris Hordecki, which we've already talked about, your teammates fighting Samuel Gillette, and then Christoph Szczesny. He's going to be taking on Ichil Arenas, I believe, for the heavyweight championship of TKO.
Yep, that's right.
Has Christoph been still training with you guys as well?
Christoph's been spending a lot of time with Boss Rudin training, and you know, he's actually from Winnipeg, you know, he spent a lot of time training with us and staying with us, and you know, he's part of the team, but he's kind of all over the place. He's been getting, you know, a lot of cross training at different gyms and with different trainers, but. The majority of training for this one has been with Boss, and he's teaching the same system we are. You know, it all developed from the same root system. So it's he's still getting the Team Tompkins training.
So Sam, what does it mean when you describe a system that's very interesting to me? Do you have a fighting philosophy on the team, and what would you say the system consists of?
Well, the Boss Rudin has a system, a fighting system. And, you know, certain combinations, certain game plan, as you can see, you know, he likes that liver shot. We like to throw those leg kicks. We like to bang people and, we like to bang them up, not just go for the win, but punish people doing it, you know?
Well, you know, one of the interesting things about this card is that it really reflects sort of like the working relationship that TKO has between the UFC and TKO, because you've got Mark Hominick and yourself coming back to fight, and you're defending your title, and Mark Hominick, you know, it appeared that he might be fighting Hioki to try to get back his TKO title, but what... You know, I know you don't want to look past Jay Estrada, but what is your plan here, Sam, as far as looking ahead to returning to the UFC? Have you spoken with them at all, or Sean Tompkins talked to them? Do they have some plans for you in the future?
Well, I'm not 100% sure about that. I kind of let Sean worry about it, and he's, you know, I like to take things one fight at a time, and I think Sean knows that. So if he has heard from him, he's just kind of, you know, keeping that to himself until this fight's over and done with, and that's the way I prefer it. You know, I just like to take it one fight at a time and just stay focused on the you know, on the present.
Sam, do you know
and
what that,
you know when you when you? Oh, sorry.
No, go
what
ahead.
Were you saying?
Go ahead.
I was just going to say when you focus on the present, that's when things start to happen for you in the future. If you look too far ahead, it's just you get way too ahead of yourself. Then that's when things start to go downhill on you.
Sam, we've heard tell that the next Ultimate Fighter is going to be exclusively 155 fighters. Would you be interested in doing something like that, or do you think you've now established yourself well enough that it would be beneath you to live with another bunch of other grunts for 6 weeks?
Yeah, I wouldn't be a big fan of being locked up in a house with a bunch of guys I'm going to be fighting with. But, you know, I don't think that's my... For me personally, I don't think that's would be my... preferable route to take, but you know, if the opportunity were there, it's a great chance for exposure and everything. So if the offer was on the table, I'd probably end up going. But I kind of would hope that I could just get in there the old-fashioned way and just work my way up through the ranks and do it that way.
Well, discuss. discussing the UFC lightweight picture. Of course, Sean Sherk's going to be taking on Kenny Florian, and, you know, coming from a guy who's fought Kenny Florian, do you have a prediction on that fight, Sam?
You know, Kenny's real tough, and he's not, like, I don't think Sean should underestimate him, but Sean Sherk is just a powerhouse. He, you know, he's so strong, especially to have him be fighting at 155, and I don't think he'll really have had to sacrifice any of his strength, because from what I hear, he walks around 170. He doesn't have to cut a whole lot of weight to make 155. No more than Kenny's going to have to. So I think he's going to be a force at 155. And you know, I'm thinking Kenny Florian's going to have a tough time pulling that one out.
Yeah, it
seems to me that he must have some kind of David Blaine levitation thing that he does during weigh-ins, because the guy looked absolutely ripped at 170. I can't imagine him going down, but apparently he's, according to Monty Cox, he's been successful a couple times now going down to 155.
Well, yeah, I was just out training with Jeff Curran, who had been at his gym and done a little training with him, and he was telling me that Sean Sherk said something about having to eat like 8,000 calories a day just to stay at 170. Like he's just a brick shit house, that guy. But another thing you got to understand is he's only, what, 5 foot five?
Yeah.
Or 5 foot four, 5 foot five. He's not a very tall guy, but, which also makes him a lot more dangerous. He can change levels and go for that shot so fast, you know. He's a dangerous fighter.
Sam, my last question for you, you know, this week alone, there's been more announcements about other organizations starting up, and it's kind of a reoccurring theme. I've talked to many fighters about this fact, but, you know, and most of them say, hey, it's great for the sport, it's great progress, but, you know, the thought also comes across, too, sometimes, at the same time, do you ever get concerned as a fighter that, you know, the fact that there's many promotions out there, it is good for you guys, competition is good, but it almost might be getting too muddled out there now to sort of figure out who's fighting for what, and there's perhaps too many belts and championships out there. Do you ever look at it that way, or do you just view it as clear?
I'd like to, honestly, in a perfect world, we'd all be fighting for the same organization where, you know, the best man would be on top, and there wouldn't be any controversy about, oh, well, the King of the Cage champ could beat the TKO champ and this and that. But, you know, on the other hand, you need all those, the competition, because if one organization just has a monopoly on it, then no one's going to get paid. So, you know, I'd like to see the pay scale go up and some of these organizations come and start working together, but I don't see that happening anytime soon with all the, you know, the egos and everyone trying to be the best and everyone trying to, you know, sign every fighter and on exclusive contracts, and it's just, you know, that's just the way it is.
Sam, my last question for you is, it seems now at in the upper echelons of MMA, a trend has been established that the ideal way to train for MMA is to be a fantastic striker and then build up your ground abilities to a level where you're competent, and then no one's going to be able to take you down, at least successfully. And when they do, you can get back up. And many people have argued that the striking part of this is actually the hardest thing to learn. So do you see yourself as being well positioned in this new formula of how to build a great MMA fighter?
Yeah, well, I think I have a leg up on a lot of guys when it comes to striking. I feel that way for sure. Yeah, it's worked for a lot of the top guys. Like, you look at guys like Chuck Liddell, who is pretty much seems untouchable right now, and the guys, you know, the guys who can keep it on their feet and stand and out strike people seem to be doing well. But on the other hand, you got guys like, you know, Matt Hughes and George St. Pierre who are going the other way, who can stand and strike and hang with people on their feet, but it's pretty hard to stop them from taking you down. So it, really, it's a chess match every MMA fight. So, but you know, that's my game plan. You know, that's always been my game plan, to, you know, keep the fights on my feet and outstrike people. But yeah, so it all just depends on how you look at it, I guess.
Well, Sam, it is going to be an interesting card, probably an extremely entertaining card, coming up TKO 29, September 29th at the Bell Center in Montreal, and Sam Sow taking on Jay Estrada, defending his lightweight championship. Sam, we appreciate coming on the show, and we wish you all the best of luck.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Sam.
All right, take care.
Cage Fury Fighting Championship is coming to Atlantic City Friday, October 6th. This event guarantees nonstop action and a special appearance by Frank Shamrock. The excitement starts the day before at the weigh-in pre-party at the 4040 Club. Don't miss all the excitement. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com or CageFuryFighting.com.
Have you subscribed to Full Contact Fighter? FCF is the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and no avid MMA fan should ever miss an issue. For years now, FCF has been providing MMA enthusiasts in-depth coverage of the world's greatest sport. Each issue contains event reports and photos from across the globe, including coverage from Japan, Brazil, Britain, Canada, and the United States. From fighter bios, technical advice, to training tips, FCF is the only publication that brings you all the MMA coverage you need every month, 12 times a year. Check out www.fcfighter.com for subscription information or call 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world.
Hey, this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Joining us now on Full Contact Fighter Radio is the experiment, Christoph Szczesinski. And Christoph, how are you doing today?
I am doing fantastic, getting ready for my big fight next weekend.
Right, now Christoph is going to be taking on Ichil Arenas at TKO 29 for the TKO World Heavyweight title. And Christoph, how's the training coming along, and what's the game plan going up against a big, strong guy like Ichil?
Well, the training's been going really good. As you know, I just fought for the IFL a couple weeks ago, so I haven't stopped training. It's been about 6 weeks straight now that I've been in training with Boss Rutan and Team Anacondas from Los Angeles, so we've been training really hard, so I will be ready as far as my conditioning and my training goes. But as far as the game plan goes, we really, not really sure yet. I haven't really spoken with Sean Tompkins and with him about it really yet, so I'm thinking right now I've been working really hard on my stand-up. We definitely like to trade with him and see what he's got to offer. And from what I've seen in his UFC fight, he was being taken down a lot by his opponent and ground and pounded all the way till the TKO happened. So that's also a part of our game plan that we would probably go into as well.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned the fight against Tom Howard at the IFL, and I mean, you've been a crazy, crazy busy guy lately. For those people who didn't get to see the fight or hear about it, tell us a little bit about your TKO win over Howard.
I came out a little slow for that fight. I was really under a lot of pressure. I was the last one in line. Everybody else won their fights. I was fighting a guy who hasn't won yet, and you know, so he's hungry and he's gonna throw everything he's got at me. So I was under a little bit of a pressure. So I came out a little slow. He hit me with a hook and cut me open. And right after that, I don't know, something happened to me. I snapped and just finished him off with a TKO. He kind of turned, hit him with a good uppercut and started landing a few punches on him standing. And he turned away and started walking away. And the kind of ref jumped in and stopped the fight. I sort of wish he didn't stop the fight yet. I really wanted the KO for the bonus, but you know, it happened as a TKO, and kind of the crowd wasn't really too happy with it because they felt that the ref stopped the fight a little early. But once a fighter starts walking away, he's not protecting himself. You know what I mean? It's, you know, the fight should be stopped. So
yeah. Well, and you mentioned the cut, and I had read that. I didn't get to see the fight, unfortunately, but I had read that you had been cut, and I take it then it wasn't too deep, that it's going to be fine for your upcoming fight?
Well, the ref, yeah, my eye is fine. It's pretty much healed completely. You know, just got a little bit of a scab over my eye right now, but it's going to fall off in the next couple days, and it's going to be fine. The cut wasn't too deep, but it was pretty long, so the doctor, when he looked at it, he was kind of hesitant to let me continue, but he did let me continue, and the ref said if I see you get hit there one more time, I'm going to stop it, so I don't know. Just something in me snapped, and off I went, and, you know, I was over about 30 seconds later, so.
Right. Now, you know, you're also coming off a fairly recent win against Jan Pellerin, which you won with Kimura, and I think some people who maybe only seen your IFL fights, you know, Tom Howard won with the strikes, Ben Rothwell, which, you know, you were doing very well against, you know, I think many would say, including myself, Ben Rothwell is arguably, you know, the best heavyweight outside the UFC in North America right now, and that fight was a slugfest, too, until Ben came back against you. But do you think, you know, the Pellerin fight that kind of demonstrated that some people might be forgetting about the fact that you've got a pretty good ground game? And maybe tell us a little bit about your jiu-jitsu experience and your belt ranking.
Definitely. I started when I first started getting into the sport, I started training under Rodrigo Mundaruca and Joe Dirksen here in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. And I've trained with them for almost 3 years. So I didn't know anything about stand-up or wrestling or anything like that up until I met, you know, Boss Rutan and Sean Tompkins. And, you know, that's where I learned my stand-up from. But for the first 3 years of my career, as far as fighting and training, was all with Rodrigo Mundaruca and Joe Dirksen working on my jiu-jitsu. So I'm a blue belt with three stripes under Rodrigo. This is, you know, once I got into MMA, I took off the gi and I no longer train with the gi, but before that I was a blue belt with two stripes under Rodrigo working towards my purple belt. So, you know, I do have the ground skill game for sure. And, you know, I have a little bit of a wrestling background as well. And, you know what I mean? So I do have the all-around fighting game that I, you know, that I started with jiu-jitsu, got into wrestling, and, you know, now I'm working on my stand-up. So, you know, people are a little surprised that, you know, I have some ground game, but I do.
Yeah. Well, you know, my next question then for you is, you know, there was a point there where you were regarded as, and you used to fight in light heavyweight as well. You've kind of gone back and forth between the heavyweight, light heavyweight division. And you're off to quite the stellar beginning, quite the stellar start. Ran into a couple tough losses, and then you switched up and you went to Team Tompkins. Was that part of the reason why? Did you feel you had to work on your stand-up more, or was it just different circumstances dictated the switch in camp?
Yeah, no, it was a certain circumstances that switched around. You know what I mean? I had a little bit of a falling out here in Winnipeg with Rodrigo. We didn't see eye to eye on a few things, and Sean Tompkins came in with some of his fighters for my show that I promote here called Ultimate Cage Wars. Sean Tompkins was in town with some of his fighters for my show, and he and I just sat down together, started talking about everything, and we realized that we connected really well, and he invited me out to come and train with them, and, you know, that's how it happened.
Now, you mentioned, like, a falling out. I'm assuming you probably don't want to talk publicly about that, but...
It was just a few things that Rodrigo didn't see, that he and I didn't see eye to eye about his things. We worked our things out already. We're training together now. He's helping me get ready for HO. But I'm in town for about a week now, so he's been helping me out with everything. We're training tonight. So everything is good now. You know what I mean? It's just a few things that we did not agree, we didn't see eye to eye on. And, you know what I mean? Everything happens for a reason, like I said. And, you know, it was a reason why I met Sean Tompkins that day. It was a reason why Rodrigo and I had a falling out. And, you know what I mean? And here I am. So, and we're still friends. Everybody's friends, and we're good. And we're training together hard, so no big deal.
Fair enough. Now, I already mentioned the Ben Rothwell fight, but and I know I've got a few comments from you before from my FCF column, but maybe for those people who you know, maybe didn't read that, what were your thoughts on the Rothwell fight? Like I said, you know, you were kind of taking it to him a bit in the beginning, and I think that might have surprised him. But
that fight, you know, I had the kid up against the ropes. I had him hurt. You know, I just didn't have that killer instincts to finish him. You know what I mean? For some reason, I just back and watch him dazed there up against the ropes, and I didn't go for the killer to finish him. I didn't take him down, or I didn't try to knock him out or anything. I don't know why that happened. And then, you know, he just came back on top, came back on me, hit me with a nice hook. I went down, and, you know, he got covered up well, but obviously I wasn't defending myself properly because I wasn't moving. I was just sitting there taking some punches. And the rest of the fight with 1 second to go, you know, I mean, I really badly want a rematch with him, and I'm really hoping that we'll get the chance to meet in the IFL finals at the end of the year, because that's a fight that I really, actually the whole team of Anacondas wants a revenge on the Miletic team, so we definitely want to fight them again very soon, for sure.
Right. Now, I'll ask you a little bit about the UCW in just a minute, but before we get into that, my last question as far as your own career goes, what's it like training for Boss Rudin? I think a lot of people, training with Boss Rudin, I think a lot of people would want to know, well, what's that experience like, and what has that meant for your career as far as training with him now the last little while?
Training with Boss Rudin means everything to me. You know, I mean, Sean Tompkins is the reason why I'm training with Boss Rudin. He's the one that introduced me to him at the K-1 tryouts. And training with him has just been incredible. He's taught me so much, not just inside the ring and inside the cage, but outside as well. The thing that was lacking with me was the mental game. You know what I mean? I've had the physical. I can, you know, I train harder than I think any heavyweight out there is. But it was the mental part I was missing, and he's the one that really brought that out of me right now. And my mental game is ready. I'm prepared 100% because of him, and for him, I own everything.
Now, Ultimate Cage Wars, for some people who don't know, Krzysztof Zyzynski, extremely busy man, promoter for UCW in Winnipeg. October 28th is your next show coming up, right?
Yes, correct.
And do we know anything about the card yet for that card?
Definitely. We're definitely bringing in a lot of faces that we've seen before. Our special guest for the show is going to be Boss Rudin. He's actually going to be running a seminar for us as well the day after the fights. But we're bringing guys like Antonio Buonello's from The Pit. He's going to be coming back to fight for us. Aaron Double Belt Trigger from Team Tompkins is going to be back for us. I'm working on Jesse Bonfeld and Justin Taverini. Our show is basically, you know, training in the top young Canadian talent that we have in Canada, mixed in with some of the really good talent across the United States.
So it's going to be another great card, as always. You know, I try to being a fighter first and a promoter second, I always make sure that the fighters get taken really well of, and that's what I try to do out here. So it's going to be a great card.
And how many of the UCWs have you put on now, Christoph?
This will be our sixth one.
Oh, wow. And how has it been taken to, as far as media in Winnipeg goes? Is MMA growing in Manitoba just like it is in the rest of Canada?
Oh, definitely. It's definitely growing. You know, I mean, they already have, you know, there's already another show here that promotes MMA and kickboxing and boxing altogether. There's a few other companies from across Canada that we're thinking about, like King of the Cage, and a few other companies have been thinking about trying to come in here and doing their shows and stuff. So, you know, it's definitely evolved. There's more gyms now opened who train MMA. There's a lot more fighters out here. So it definitely has evolved just like everywhere else across Canada.
And, Christoph, my final question for you, you know, being a fellow Canadian, and, you know, when are we going to get the Jets back, man? Winnipeg's going to get the Jets back?
You know
back?
What? I read in the paper. I just got back from Los Angeles 2 days ago, and I read in the paper that there's a word that the Jets might be actually coming back. There might be another national hockey team here. So, you know, hopefully it might be happening in the next year or two. So we'll see. I'm, like, actually really excited about that if that actually happens.
Yeah, no kidding. That's intriguing. I won't turn it into a hockey podcast. We'll keep it with MMA. But, Christoph, best of luck coming up against each other arenas, and we thank you for taking some time out and coming and talk to us.
Thank you very much for having me. And that fight against Ichiro is going to be an absolute war, man. Just you guys wait. You guys are going to go nuts over it.
All right, I'm psyched. Okay, thanks, Christoph.
All right, thank you. Take care.
Take care. Hey guys, Kelsey Mode here from Full Contact Fighter Radio. Listen, if you have any comments, questions, or just want to flat out tell me off, contact me at radio@fcfighter.com. That address, again, is radio@fcfighter.com.
Any correspondence that is sent to Mr. Moe must be presented in business letter format in an aerial script with a font point no larger than 12 and no smaller than 8. All letters must be written in UK English and must be received by Mr. Moe before no later than 12 hours prior to the posting of this program. Any fiscal donations must be in Canadian currency, and please pay no attention to this previous statement.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter. And Brendan, some interesting comments from Sam Stout and Christoph Szczesinski, and well, it definitely sounds like there's a little bit of animosity between J.S. Stroud and Sam Stout, and how much of that is, you know, pre-fight banter and just done deliberately to create a little bit of hype for the fight. It's kind of hard to say, but it sounds like some of the comments from J.S. Stroud have definitely gotten under the skin of Sam Stout.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how that pans out. Stout needs a big win, I think, and he needs to come back and look impressive in his rebounding from his very unimpressive loss at the UFC. So
yeah.
I got a bit of news before we make our UFC picks, and it looks like Pride has finally called the fight, and it looks like it's going to be in the Bushido finals. Filo and Misaki and Gono and Kang.
Well, I guess that was, you know, what Dennis told us he expected that it would happen, and shouldn't be, I guess, too much of a big surprise.
So the big question, I guess, is will Dennis be able to display his patience in enduring another Gono elaborate entrance / disco dance, and then have to face off against the guy who has the worst party pants in MMA.
That matchup, I think, favors Dennis as far as advancing to the final, because I think, you know, if you look at Misaki defeating Dan Henderson versus Gono, and to take nothing away from Gono, who's had some pretty nice performances in the last year, I think that matchup does favor Dennis, you know, versus Dennis going up against Misaki. You got to think that no one really would want to. What I'm trying to say is I think both Paul Filo and Dennis Kang, you would assume, would have preferred to fight Gono rather than Misaki,
mm-hmm.
the guy who just took out Henderson.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see. Maybe Misaki's got some takedown defense. We didn't really see it tested by Hendo that much, but who knows? Maybe he can inflict some serious punishment on Filo going through. I think if Filo takes him down, it has potential to be a short fight. But we'll see. We'll see what his takedown defense looks like.
Yeah, and some other news too. Jason McDonald has been announced. Another guy has been on our show. He's been announced he's going to fight Ed Herman in the UFC. On October 10th, in the undercard, Ken Shamrock and Tito Ortiz, so I wanted to mention that as well. And, it's pretty an interesting card coming up here in Vancouver. I'm going to be able to go check it out and you know, report on it for the radio show and for FCF. Elite Fighting Championships is having their second card here next Friday. And Marvin Eastman's taking on Vernon White in the main event. So, yeah, that should be a cool fight to go check out.
That's a nice little fight. I would like to be there myself. So maybe you can hook a brother up.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. But the big news, of course, the big event coming up this weekend, you know, outsiders, I mean, the IFL too, which is, you know, we've done a lot of pre-work on and had some guys on coming, fighting on that card this weekend. But yeah, the biggest news, I suppose, is it's safe to say UFC 63, Matt Hughes versus BJ Penn, and we got to go through the card, man, and make our picks. And as always, won't go through necessarily all the fights, but the first one I wanted to talk about, George Gergel versus Danny Iabati. Brennan, who are you picking?
Well, this is the Danny from the reality show, and it seems to me, if this is this fight's going down at 155, I think.
Yeah, it's 155, yeah.
So that will have Iabati coming down not one, but two weight classes, because he was on the show, I believe, at 185.
Right.
So this will be interesting, and it's a kind of a, I don't know, it's tough that the UFC sets up Gergel like this, because because, you know, if he fights a big name fighter, he's in for a tough, you know, he could be in for a tough fight and potentially a third loss, so it's difficult to bring him back to the show. But if he loses, then if he wins, who is he fighting? You know, I think he's expected to basically dominate Iabati. So I think it's a tough, he's in tough, you know, against this guy. And he's going to be fighting a guy who's come down two weight classes. So it'll be interesting to see how he responds to that. So it's kind of an awkward position for Gergel to be in, I think.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. You know, you still haven't made a pick, but from the sounds of it, you're going with Gergel.
I think so, yeah. You'd have to. It sounds like his knee is healed up fairly well, and I think he's willing to make. I think he's got to make a big comeback against his last fight. I know the fans weren't overly impressed with it, so I think he's got to make a big splash here. And I got to go with him. Just looking at Iabati's record, I think Gergel has a much more well-rounded background.
Yeah, we're going to have no disagreements here. Gergel, far more experienced from what I've seen of Danny Iabati. You know, he's got a lot of work to do on his ground game in trying to even compete with Gergel in that aspect of MMA. And then, of course, if you look at Gergel's stand-up game against Mark Hominick, I think it surprised some people how competent and how, you know, it looked very, very good. Even Mark Hominick told us on the show that he was somewhat surprised at Gergel's stand-up capabilities. So, yeah, I'd have to agree with you. I think that, you know, barring, this could be a huge upset, one of the bigger upsets on the card if Iabati was to win, really, if you look at it. But, yeah, go with Gergel. The next one I want to talk about is, and I'm really excited about this fight, is Gabe Rudiger versus Melvin Guillard. And, yeah, Brendan, what do you think?
I think this will be an excellent fight, and it will be great to see both these guys again. Guillard, I wasn't that stoked on him watching him in the show, but you know, these guys seem to make great recoveries from what may be an aspect of their real lives or not. And I think he was portrayed as at least his style was portrayed as slightly weak in the show, but his last two performances have really impressed me, especially his last one. But he's in tough, I think, against Rudiger, I'm gonna actually have to go with Rudiger in this fight.
Yeah, this one's tough to call, you know, and sometimes I find now when you're trying to make picks on guys that you've only seen a couple times and it's only been in a short period of time, you know, Gabe Rudiger, I admit, I've never seen fight. This is his UFC debut. He's been fighting on smaller shows in California, which is, you know, hard sometimes for people like us up here in Canada to check out. Melvin Guillard, I've seen a fight a couple times, of course. But, you know, from what I've heard and read about Gabe, he's got a really good ground game, pretty good, decent stand-up skills as well. Guillard is, you know, thunderous on his feet, and he's displayed that. Whether or not he's kind of, you know, patched the holes in his ground game, it's hard to say, but I think I'm going to go with Rudiger on this. I think, you know, he doesn't have the experience yet of Guillard either. You know, Guillard's got over 40 fights, which is a lot considering how young he is. But there's just, I think I'm going to go with Rudiger. I think I'll be able to get it to the ground and submit him, but this one is a tough, tough one to call.
Mm-hmm.
Next, Jens Palmer versus Joe Lauzon. This one's another tough one for me to make a pick on because I haven't, you know, again, Joe Lauzon's kind of same predicament for myself as Gabe Rudiger. I haven't seen him fight, just, you know, done some reading, seen what other people have said about him. But, I mean, come on, you're going up against Jens Palmer, and this, you know, I think, If Lauzon did beat Pulver, it would be the second biggest upset, if, you know, barring Abadi taking out Jergal, but I'm going to go with Jens Palmer. I mean, the guy's a former champion. He's fought all over the world, and I just think that, yeah, you got to go with Palmer, but Brendan, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you're going to go with Lauza?
Well, no. I think this is not going to be my crazy pick of the night. I've seen Lauza fight once, but he's in tough, and I think this looks like, to me, an effort to sort of build Jens up for a big challenge to whoever was the winner of Shirk Florian. So I think this will be one fight and then maybe one more before we see that contest. So I don't see Jens. Jens has looked slightly flaky before, but against extremely high-level competitors, so I can't see him making any mistakes in this fight. So I think it's a pretty safe pick with Palmer.
Yeah, I guess sometimes we're dodging out of really good predictions because we don't ever really call it. I mean, sometimes when we're discussing the fight, someone, you know, one of us might mention, I think he's going to submit him, but, you know, we don't ever really say knockout round one or submission round two, so I guess we're kind of flaking out on that. But next fight is going to be, well, yeah, man, you know, I think really if we had the big balls, we'd be making the specific picks.
All right.
But
TKO Palmer round one.
No, dude, we don't have to do it this time.
Oh,
see,
okay.
This way, like, you know, we still get to brag. Like, last time we picked Krokop.
Hey, how can you do better than last time? I had them all right last time, so, you know.
Yeah.
I guess this time I'll try and have flashier picks.
Right.
Next time.
Well, here's an opportunity. Jason Lambert versus Rashad Evans. This is going to be a great light heavyweight fight. You know, I don't think this fight's actually getting enough buzz, and I suppose that's maybe because some people still, you know, look at Rashad Evans and say a lot of his fights go to decision. But, you know, I'm psyched about this fight. I think this could be, you know, two of the better light heavyweights in the UFC light heavyweight division that don't get a lot of press. And, Brendan, who are you taking?
I think, you know, Lambert's, his record is really impressive, especially this streak of wins that he's kind of put together. He seems like one of these legitimate up-and-coming guys, and he certainly looked great against Rob McDonald when we saw him fight.
Yeah.
He looked good against Hinkle. He's beaten, you know, some really big names on the way up, Eastman and Horwich and Chael Sonnen. So his last loss, I guess, he lost to Sonnen and he lost to Cabbage. So, you know, nothing to be too embarrassed about. But then again, you know, we picked against Rashad the last two times, and his last fight actually really impressed me as well. So I'm kind of hating to pick against Rashad again because I've been burned like this. So I'm going to have to go with Rashad in this one. Sorry, buddy.
See, I was going to go. I thought for sure you're going to go with Lambert.
No,
I'm going with Rashad too, man. You know,
like I said, I'm completely dispassionate and uber rational in my picking these days.
Well, you know, it's you can only watch a horse feed from a bale of hay so many times, right?
and by that you mean?
I just made that off the top of my head.
that's some really profound homespun wisdom there, Kelsey. Yeah. I almost
that's
like,
some actually, I borrowed that from some Saskatchewan folklore. You know, you being a Saskatchewan native, thought I'd throw that back at you. I read that on a site today, man. That's the Saskatchewan mantra.
Really?
Yeah.
You can only watch a horse eat from a bale of hay so often. Is that it?
So many times, yeah.
So many times.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. But yeah, I'm going to go with Rashad Evans as well. You know, he. As much as sometimes his performances, his wins haven't exactly been highlight reel material, you know, I've picked against him a couple times in a row, and, you know, this just seems like this is another tailor-made fight where, you know, someone's tempted to say, yeah, Lambert, you know, he's got the finishing skills, let's go with him, but
mm-hmm.
I think Evans, I'm going to go with Evans too. I mean, he's proved me wrong too many times, and this time I'm going with Rashad.
Yeah, I haven't been too crazy about Bonner lately, but, you know, and Evans in that fight didn't even look at any point in the remotest remotest potential for being in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, he just looked so dominant and so in control. And,
his wrestling, you know, it's just like anytime the guy's kind of in trouble, he takes it to the mat right away, mm-hmm. almost effortlessly.
Yeah.
And I just think that, you know, to bet against him, to say that he's not going to be able to do that against Jason Lambert, I don't know. You know, I just, as much as, from what I know about Lambert and when I've seen him fight, I just think that, you know, Evans could very well take him down, and I expect him to be able to do that again, and that's why I'm going with him. And maybe Lambert is going to prove me wrong, but the next fight, I think a lot of people are really excited to see, and then this fight's getting a lot of hype, which is good. It's well deserved. Mike Swick versus David Loazzo in the middleweight division, 185 pounds. We had David on the show a couple weeks ago. This fight's going to be crazy, exciting. Let's hope. Brendan, who are you going with? I think you alluded to a Loazzo prediction a little bit the last time we were discussing.
Yeah, I got to go with the Blackbird. I see this as being the big test for Swick. I don't think he's been tested like this before. I don't think he's proved in the Franklin fight that he can take the pounding of a lifetime and still remain standing. I know Swick definitely has to stand up to knock Loazzo out, but again, we haven't seen that either. So I don't think, and Loazzo is just so good and so slick on the ground that I don't see Swick going down there. So I think it's going to be a nice little stand up war, and I think Loazzo will pull it out just through perseverance and his ability to assume a lot of assimilate a lot of punishing blows. I see Swick taking it to him and actually either gassing himself out or just becoming frustrated, and I see Loazzo putting this away.
Yeah, this one is really hard for me to call, and you know, being a Canadian, it's sometimes tough to remove your heart from your predictions, but you know, as a journalist, man, you got to try to do that, and I'm going to go with Swick. You know, maybe perhaps because you're going with Loazzo, and so far we don't have one difference in our picks, but I got to use the same logic which I have for Rashad Evans. I've gone against Swick a couple times now, and I don't necessarily think that the logic that he hasn't fought anybody yet. I think he proved himself against a guy like Joe Riggs, and you know, I know the circumstances that surrounded his fight with Joe Riggs are different than this. You can argue about Joe Riggs moving up and down in weight, etc., but I think Swick is going to come away with the win, and it's a tough one to call. Yeah, this is definitely the one of the fight that I would not want to bet on for fear of losing my money, but I'll go with Swick.
All right.
Yeah. So now we've got one difference between us. Good. Final fight. Matt Hughes, BJ Penn. Brendan, who are you picking?
This was a tough one for me to think about because, you know, the first fight that BJ Penn ever really impressed me in was actually recently was his last fight against St. Pierre, especially his stand-up. And Matt Hughes is actually not impressed me. It seems people are split between being BJ Penn nuthuggers or Matt Hughes nuthuggers, and actually I've been unimpressed by them both in their last in their previous fights. BJ, I think if the fight ends in the first two rounds, it'll be BJ coming out on top. I'm not sure if he can hang with Hughes. I think Hughes traditionally a slow starter, so I think this might be a fight that's determined very much by the pace one or the other can push or the way they can bring the fight down, and I think it's probably to Hughes' advantage to drag it out. So the question is, does Hughes have the capacity to drag the fight into the latter rounds? And I think that he does. So I'm going to have to go with Hughes here. And I think that I don't actually see this as being the barn burner. I'm coming in with very low expectations because I don't want to be profoundly disappointed. But I think it could be one of those fights that is actually quite disappointing. So I see Hughes dragging this out to the fourth or fifth or maybe even a decision.
Yeah, I'm going with Hughes as well. I don't necessarily agree with you saying that, you know, Hughes hasn't impressed you. I mean, yeah, okay, against...
Well, he didn't impress me.
Well,
what do you mean?
Okay, fine, but, you know, I don't understand. You know, a guy can say, I don't understand where you're coming from. He walks through Joe Riggs, showed great jiu-jitsu in that situation. Nice comeback win against Frank Trigg, the one before that. George St. Pierre gave him some troubles, but, I mean, still pulls out an armbar against a guy against, like George St. Pierre, has got great ground. To me, Hughes, yeah, against Chiruto Rizzimo, he looked kind of flat, and I'd go with that. And you could argue, you know, hey, he almost got caught against Trigg, but that was a low blow. So the fact that he came back and the way he did against Trigg, he hit with a low blow, stunned, in trouble, comes back. The guy showed me a lot. And, I'm going to go with Hughes. I think that this fight's going to be, I think the key difference in the BJ Penn-George St. Pierre, even though it was an extremely close fight, I think that George, his game plan, where he made the mistake, was that he thought he was going to be able to outstrike BJ. And, you know, he kind of got that thumb in the eye or took a shot to the eye, which really, in the first round, which really threw a wrench in his game plan. And that was the round that BJ won. I don't think Matt Hughes is going to make that mistake. And I think Matt Hughes is going to look at how George beat BJ Penn and probably, and I agree with you as far as how the fight's going to unfold. I think you're going to see Matt Hughes taking BJ to the ground. He's not going to try to stand with him like George did. He's going to take him to the ground. BJ is very competent on the ground, and I think, you know, it'll be tough for Matt to stop him. So I agree with you on that. I think it'll probably be kind of a lackluster fight, but yeah, I think you got to go with Hughes.
You know, I don't want to make it sound like I'm dissing either Hughes or BJ. I respect them both as fighters, but I'm not one to put either up on a pedestal. I think unlike the heavyweight division and the light heavyweight division in the UFC, any one of the top five or six welterweights could beat any other one. I think on any given night, and you can't say that for any other division. And I just don't think that Penn and I don't think that Hughes are so much more advanced fighters or more skilled technically fighters than their counterparts in that division. So, you know, I think it's going to be a good fight, but it's a little bit too much hype for my liking.
Yeah, I know where you're going with that. I can see what you're saying, but you know, it is a matchup between, you know, BJ Penn and Matt Hughes, the guy who beat Hughes before, and no one expected that. And then BJ, you know, narrowly lost to George St. Pierre, who, you know, stormed through all the other contenders in the division. What I'm most interested to see is what happens after this, because did you read this week, Brendan, that there's some talk, and I didn't see it substantiated by any UFC official or any UFC source, but there was some talk as if, you know, Diego Sanchez may be in line to fight the winner of this fight. So, you know, I know that that can't be correct because George St. Pierre has, you know, been waiting for a title shot now for quite some time. But it'll be interesting to see what they do. You know, if BJ wins, do you go back to George St. Pierre? Does the UFC say, okay, we promise you a title shot, but he's already beat BJ before? Or do they say, okay, well, we'll do the winner of Matt Hughes and George St. Pierre round two to go up against BJ, or do you throw Diego in the mix? I mean,
yeah, I think you got to go with St. Pierre because the hype was already built up.
Yeah, I agree.
Right, and the potential for that being, see, one of the worries of this fight for me in terms of being a disappointing fight is that both guys go in there and are quite tentative, and they fight a fight where they don't leave it out there, right? And I think St. Pierre and both Diego as well are fighters that probably won't do that. So that's my greatest fear for this fight.
Do you think that
Penn, you can't build up St. Pierre anymore, so you got to go. You got to give him the shot.
Even if
BJ wins, I think for sure you got to give him the shot.
But do you think that maybe this talk about Sanchez, it may be, you know, somewhat in the right ballpark, but it's more along the lines that perhaps the UFC has promised Sanchez the winner or the loser against Diego, possibly? Do you think maybe that's a... meaning if BJ loses, then maybe
that would actually make more sense.
Yeah, that's what I thought when I read when I saw these people, you know, discussing that. That was my first inclination.
I don't know whoever said that. It's probably not. It probably wouldn't be common knowledge to all the UFC.
No, I believe actually. No, honestly, it was quoted. It was a reference quote of Diego Sanchez saying, you know, and like I said, I don't want to say this is substantiated or that the source is legitimate, but basically it was, you know, saying alleging that Sanchez had said that the UFC had discussed a title shot with him next. But I that was my first inclination too, was that there was probably some mistake and the person did not understand what he had said, and that more likely the scenario would be the loser of BJ Penn versus Matt Hughes against Diego, and then, you know, you kind of see where that leads.
Well, we've seen weirder things happen in the UFC, so who knows?
Well, that's the history of mixed martial arts, you know, especially sometimes at the UFC as well. Things happen, and, you know, know, they come up with fights that you're not really expecting. I mean, like Anderson Silva versus Rich Franklin, that when that announcement came out, I was in Calgary when I heard that that was finalized, and, you know, that struck me as odd immediately, just because...
I almost cracked an egg when I heard that.
Well, I mean, I was excited, of course, but right away I was like, well, why not build up Anderson Silva a bit, you know? Like, why not throw him out? There's a lot of middleweight fighters. I know you could argue that they wanted to get Rich Franklin back in the ring or in the octagon, and who is he going to fight if it wasn't Anderson Silva? There's all those arguments, but... You know, there's a fight that I don't know if it'll be hyped enough by the time it comes around for the sort of the mainstream fans or people who haven't followed Anderson Silva's career.
Mm-hmm. Well, they've actually made a lot of decisions that I've actually really that I've respected a lot this year, especially, and that was one of them because oftentimes people have accused the UFC of protecting Franklin because he's such a quote unquote a poster boy, you know,
yeah,
a marketable guy, clean cut guy, well spoken. Educated, and there were some accusations, especially when they got rid of Lindland so unceremoniously, that they were kind of mollycoddling him, right?
Yeah.
But Anderson Silva is definitely, after he's had such a long layoff, certainly no mollycoddle. So I really respect them for putting him in tough against a guy like that.
Well, you're right. I mean, it'll be really interesting to see what they do. I guess if Rich Franklin does beat Anderson Silva, then it sounds like they'll give him the winner of The Ultimate Fighter, whoever wins the middleweight bracket.
Oh, that's the deal, isn't it?
Yeah. So, and to be honest, so far from, if you look at the middleweights that are there.
So Patrick Cote and Rich Franklin, I like that fight too.
Yeah, that'd be a good fight, or if you look at some of the other guys, some of the other possible matchups that it could end up being, you know, Pete Sell versus Rich Franklin, you know, you gotta go with Franklin. I think you gotta go with Franklin against Cote. There's no one really there that immediately, you know, Rivera versus Franklin, no, you're going to go with Franklin. None of the middleweights there really, I don't think, would give Franklin too much trouble.
I think Cote would probably be giving him the most trouble. But yeah,
Cote possibly,
you know,
because
be big,
of his wrestling. But
yeah, he's got to be a big, he would be a big underdog in that fight for sure.
Yeah, and again, we're just... we're doing hypotheticals, you know.
It's not a spoiler because the winner hasn't been announced, so
yeah.
I don't want any hate mail.
Exactly. Well, Brendan, on that note, we're going to get out of here, enjoy the fights this weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Fabuloso, Kelsey, and good luck in your somewhat shaky picks.
Well, there's only one difference, so we'll see if I can tie it up. Stay tuned,
you just
folks.
Knocked out one leg on your three-legged stool, my friend.
Stay tuned, folks. Will it be 5-3 Brendan by on Sunday morning or 4-4? I know it's really...
I bet everyone is on pins and needles.
Yeah.
Have a good weekend.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.